to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Have you ever thought what you'd say to the people you love if you could communicate a message to them that would float up in a bottle years after you sent it? What would be important for you to say if you had limited space to write your message? Tyler Hayden was intrigued by these questions and is in the process of creating the Message in a Bottle book series. The first book, Mother's Message in a Bottle, was published this month, May, the month of Mother's Day. And we're talking about what 40 mothers wanted to impart to their children within the 800 words or so that they were allotted and what these messages show us. And I also would acknowledge that I am fortunate to be one of the 40 mothers included, whose story is included in this book. So welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media dedicated to helping you become aware of the importance and power of human emotions. We have two chats, one on blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living, and the other on emotionalpro.com on the radio show page. Also, you can call us toll-free at 888-498-0570. We are honored to co-create today's show with you. Well, who is Tyler Hayden? He's an international leadership and team consultant with over two decades of experience as a keynote speaker and organizational consultant. He's the author of more than a dozen books, and he's known for being pure energy. So when he does team events, he blends knowledge development and team skills with hilarious fun and out-of-the-box innovation. So we should have a great show today. He's creator of the Message in a Bottle book series and lives with his wife and two daughters on their seaside farm in the beautiful town of Lunenburg in Nova Scotia. Tyler Hayden, welcome to Full Power Living.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Eileen. It's an absolute pleasure to get to connect with you and your audience. So it's going to be a great hour, I'm hoping.
There's that pure energy. Wow, that's great.
It's here, girl. Let's bring it on. We've got lots of great things to talk about today.
Yeah, well, let's get started. What's the biggest learning that you've gotten from doing this book so far, this starting this series and doing this particular book?
Well, you know what? I guess the biggest learning is the idea of the shared experience that parents have, whether it be mothers or fathers. We actually have a mother's book, which you're in, and we've also published recently the Father's Message in a Bottle, out in time for Father's Day, which is this month coming. And so it's the idea that there is a shared experience between parents, regardless of whether it's our friend Yossi who is in Israel, or it's a person from, you know, Saskatchewan in Canada's prairies. The idea and the feeling of being a parent is very, very much connected, and there's a lot of common through lines in the way that we raise children and in a lot of the challenges that we have as parents, and sort of those challenges and those concerns that we have are very much a shared experience.
You know, I was working in my garden yesterday planting tomato plants and thinking, we humans get excited about all new, just beginning life. You know, it's an interesting thing.
Yeah, I mean, and I think one of the moms encapsulated that in the book where she said, "I've loved you since you were just an idea." You know, the idea of becoming a parent, of opening up the door to be able to connect for the long term with a small little spirit who grows into being a vibrant adult and shares the wisdom and the knowledge, that love, leadership, and legacy that you create between the two of you is an absolutely huge responsibility. And requires, much like growing your tomato plants, which I hope to do at some point here in Canada when we stop having frost. You know, I think that idea of caring and nurturing and gardening is definitely the experience of growing children, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get the idea for this book series, the Message in a Bottle series?
Well, it happened when I was about 14 years old.
Wow.
If I can go back that far. I mean, I grew up in the 80s. My parents were small business people, and I remember being up at camp in northern Canada. We were, you know, doing 12-day canoe trips through the Canadian wilderness and all that kind of stuff. And if you've ever been to camp, you know what the experience is at the end of camp, where you have the closing ceremonies. And there was a song that we sang. Whoops, pardon me, that is... That's my phone. I forgot to turn that off.
I thought that was the song itself.
maybe it should have been. We were listening to Harry Chapin, and he was singing the song, or we were singing his song, Cats in the Cradle. And we were talking, and the song talks a lot about sort of how a child grows and connects with their parents. And then as they get older, they begin to recreate that experience of what their parents had given them. And having parents who were entrepreneurs and self-employed, you know, there were often days that I would come home and the house would be lonely, and it would be my brother and I, and there were a lot of extra chores and responsibilities, you know, kind of in that latchkey type of reality. And I thought to myself, I don't want that for my kids. And now fast forward a whole bunch of years later, I've fallen in love with the most beautiful woman from Cape Breton. We've had our first child, and I'm a full-time professional speaker traveling internationally. Right at that moment, I said, that's it. I'm working 4 days a week. I'm dedicating a day during the week to be able to connect with my children. And I did that for 10 years straight while we had our two children, Tate and Bratton. And we called them special days. And on one special day, I was pushing my daughter on the swing in the little park down from our house. And I got to thinking about whether other dads were going through this turmoil and this experience of, you know, how do I connect and how do I make sure that I'm that lifelong, meaningful impact on my kids? And I put it out there to some dad colleagues, and they started to come up with a lot of the same concerns and thoughts that I had. And I thought, well, you know what, this would be kind of neat to encapsulate inside of a book, you know, more of a gift, a book that doesn't just inform but transforms relationships and helps people to connect. And that was the seed, and it just grew from there.
Wow. You know, I have a 36-year-old son with two daughters. They're 8 and 5 now. And he went through that just this year. He said, I'm busy working, and I'm missing my children's childhood. And he shifted everything. He's self-employed, so he had much more room to shift. And he pinpointed that the older child was really not doing well because she needed more input from him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, our kids take our lead off of the connections that we give to them. And a lot of time, it's just about being available to be connected. My wife went through the same thing. She was, at 30 years old, she was a high school principal. And she did
wow.
it for almost 10 years until she realized, you know what, this is not for me. You know, I've got, you know, two young children. One was about 3 years old at that time. And the other, Tate Wood, is a little bit older. She would have been probably about 9 or 10. And she actually quit her job as a principal, and she took a job as a grade 6 teacher. And she's doing that to this day, just so that she has a little bit more space mm-hmm. to be able to be that parent to her children as much as she was helping to parent and guide children as a principal. So I tell you, you know, I think being self-employed, it's a little easier. Like, it was easier for me, but I think it's doable, and I think it's a great responsibility and a great opportunity if you can figure out how to do it.
Mm-hmm. For different reasons, I was a single parent for 20 years. My son is particularly sensitive to the latchkey kind of thing. My
Sure.
office was in the backyard, but I am a psychotherapist, and he had strict rules. You cannot bother me when I'm working, you know.
Yeah, well,
so he might as well have been on his own, except for every hour when I would check in with him, but that was nothing. So I'm very interested, as you're talking about this, how we stimulate the next generation to look at certain patterns and make shifts.
Well, I think that it's kind of like there's a guy, Richard Lavoie, who talks about poker chip theory. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
No, I haven't.
It's a really cool concept where he talks about young people and the idea that young people are kind of like piggy banks. And in the beginning, we're dumping poker chips inside them. We're giving them all these poker chips and saying, you're fantastic, you know, you're beautiful, you're strong, look how smart you are, look how great a job you did, you tied your shoes. And every time we say it, they get 10 poker chips and 20 poker chips and 13 poker chips. And for every one of those esteem building and those self-worth building, responses that we give them, then kids kind of head out into the world and they start to grow up into, you know, adolescence and even young children, and people start taking away those poker chips. They start making withdrawals and saying, you know, no, you're not pretty, and look how ugly your hair is, and they start pulling the poker chips away. So the idea is as a parent, is we need to be there giving authentic poker chips. Uh-huh. As often as we can. And kids are very good at that today, about reading through the authenticity of whether or not what it is that we're saying is legit or not. And being around them allows us to be more present, not only present in their lives, but present in the way in which we can communicate with them, what those mutual respect and those deposits that we can make of the poker chips.
Right. Well, that's a lovely way of looking at it. So before your appearance, I asked you if you would select a story or two and read to us. So I'd like to give you an opportunity to do that now. There are 40 mothers who've written something in the book, starting with the fabulous Naomi Rhody, who's been the past president of the National Speakers Association. So I was impressed to see her there as well. And so each of these 40 mothers has a different story to tell about their lives, and yet there are all these commonalities, which we'll be talking about. What story would you like to read from?
Well, there's a great story by Leanne Thiamon. Do you know Leanne? She was part of Operation Baby Lift back in the Vietnam War, and she was over there to select a baby. And I'll just read you a little piece of her letter. She said, I opened the door and I entered a room filled with 100 babies. Babies on blankets and mats, babies in boxes and baskets and bassinets and cribs, and how would I ever choose? But there you were, wearing only a diaper, with your round tummy bulging over its rim. I watched as you pulled yourself up to stand beside a wooden crib and tugged the toes of the baby sleeping inside. Then you looked at me, dropped your hands and knees, and began crawling over to me. We met halfway across the room, and I picked you up. You looked at me and smiled brightly, showing off your chubby cheeks and deep dimples. I hugged you. You nestled your head into my shoulder. Maybe you'll be our son, I whispered. You pulled back, staring into my eyes, still smiling. For the next hour, I carried you around the room, looking at all the infants, touching them, talking to them. All the while, you babbled, smiled, and continued to guttle. I couldn't bring myself to put you down as I went upstairs where the floor was carpeted with even more babies. The hallway was like a megaphone, blasting with sounds of chatting workers and crying babies. I put you down to hold other infants, but each time you reached up your chubby arms and out for me, I snuggled for you, and you snuggled me back. She ended up adopting that child, and that became her son. And she said, I had been sent to choose a son, but no, you chose me. And this was God's plan, and I thank him for that, and you every day. Like, absolutely beautiful, just a beautiful experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember that story. It's sort of the whole thing just took her by surprise. It's really great.
We have a couple other letters. We've got letters in here from moms who are police officers, to dentists, to a mom who wrote a letter to her cerebral palsy because her daughter was struggling with that. I'm going to share one quick little letter if I could find it here as I'm thumbing through my book. It's a letter by a mom who is a police officer.
Right.
And here it is, Charity's letter. And she is struggling with thyroid cancer. And she said, these are the lessons I want to pass on to you. Patience, education, assertiveness, compassion. I never thought that the biggest lessons we would both get would come from cancer, but they have. You've grown to be a woman, to be the woman you choose, but I hope that when you think about the type of mother you saw every day, she was the one you would be proud to be like. I hope I danced enough in the kitchen with you to know that you have to cut loose and have fun even when you feel like crying. I hope you heard me yell at enough rude drivers to know that you should not let people treat you poorly in a car or not. I hope that you saw me cry 1 minute, but then saw me wipe my tears the next when you walked in the room and asked you about your day. For it showed that you and I have vulnerability, but also fortitude. You know, she goes through this whole struggle of how and who I am as a mother, struggling with thyroid cancer and how her daughter would be perceiving her. And at the end of the day, her daughter becomes just the recipe for her health and her strength, mm-hmm. and she becomes the reason why she is now cancer free, and she just had her fifth birthday, or her fifth cancer day, cancerversary, she calls it. Absolutely, a cancerversary. Yeah, she had her cancerversary, her fifth year at cancerversary. So that's the kind of experience that these moms write about. And as one of the moms I was talking to the other day said, you know, Tyler, you really should be selling these books with a box of Kleenex.
I can agree with that. I read it this week.
Did you? Excellent.
Yeah.
I was talking to another mom, and as she was reading the book, she said, Tyler, she said, really? She said, I can only read about 2 letters a day. And she said, then I'm having sleepless nights because I can't stop thinking about the content of the letters. And
wow.
And so there's a lot of self-reflection that happens, mm-hmm. just from this, you know, unabridged, authentic collection of letters.
Right. Because what's so nice about it is the people who did the writing, the women who did the writing, were really writing to their children. When I wrote mine, I didn't think to name my children, per se.
Right.
But most women did, and so they're really literally writing to their children and thinking, what do I want my child to know or take with them or know that I knew about or thought about? And one of them that really hit strongly with me was the woman whose name I don't recall right now, whose child had died. And she wrote a letter. She put a message in a bottle for that child as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've we experienced that in my family. Between our two children, we lost 8 different babies.
Oh, wow.
And that experience it really transcends your parenting experience. I remember we were sitting at a restaurant in Bridgewater, the big town next to ours, and we were sitting there, and we had just gone through yet another miscarriage, and this woman came from her table and walked over, and she looked at my wife and I, and we were solemn, and we had our first child with us, and she looked at us, she goes, ah, oh, she said, so beautiful, I love a baby, and this lady was probably 85 years old, and she said, we said, oh, do you have children? And she said, yes, I have 6, and she goes,
wow.
And she goes, actually 7, she said, but I'm waiting to meet one in heaven.
Uh-huh.
And I was totally captured by that, and that even that experience of having that child and losing that child frames and develops how we are as parents and how we are as global citizens. So I was pleased to see that letter that you speak of to come into the book for sure.
Yeah, I certainly relate to that. I've had 3 miscarriages myself, and in fact, I developed a technique and wrote about it to help people get past it, because I couldn't find, I'm known as the emotional pro, and I became the emotional pro because I couldn't find anything written on how exactly do you handle this kind of loss, you know, and get finished with it so it doesn't plague you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, and it's about recapturing that joy, and I think that's exactly what you're talking about. You know, recapturing that joy of life, and sometimes it can seem absolutely insurmountable.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are certain themes that emerged for me. It's time for us to have our first break, and I want to talk about some of those themes when we come back and include some more discussion about emotions as well, because certainly these stories are full of emotion. All right, so we're talking today with keynote speaker, organizational consultant, author, and editor Tyler Hayden regarding his new release, Mother's Message in a Bottle. What part does love and hope really play in a mother's mind? We'll find out when we come back. Stay tuned. How would you parent your child if he or she were a foreign exchange student? As a host for an exchange student, you'd have five main jobs to do. Those are the same five jobs important in raising kids. People around the world have used this approach to raise kids who are self-directed, make great decisions, and are immune to peer pressure. Get your copy of The Exchange Student Model for Parenting, written by me, Eileen Dillon, now available on Kindle. As a 41-year marriage and family therapist, a single, married, step, adoptive, and grandmother, I've got a thing or two to tell you that's going to lighten your load as a parent and help you create incredible kids who will become amazing adults. Go to Kindle.com and download The Exchange Student Model for Parenting today. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Our next show features an amazing woman, Julie Renee Doering. She's amazing because of two things: all of the health crises she's endured and all of the amazing things about healing the body that she has subsequently discovered and used. Julie Renee was exposed to radiation from atomic bomb testing as a child, and later she had cancer several times. She was hit by a car, and she's had over 17 operations. More than once, she was told that she was terminal. Yet, she's still here, and she's helping others to know and use what she calls their divine human blueprint. Find out what that is next week, June 5th at 9 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And please be sure to tell your friends and family about Full Power Living. You can subscribe to the series free on iTunes. You can listen to our archives at emotionalpro.com. And when you do, you're helping us with our mission of awakening the world to the importance and amazing transformative power of emotion. So thank you very much. Tyler, before we get into my guest today is Tyler Hayden, who's a creative originator of the Message in the Bottle book series, and we're talking today about Mother's Message in a Bottle. So, Tyler, what other volumes do you have planned in this series?
Well, we have the Father's book coming out for Father's Day, as we've mentioned earlier in the show. Currently, we're working on the Soldier's Message in a Bottle. So these are a host of letters from soldiers to their most loved ones, just of love, leadership, and legacy. So that's the one that we're working diligently on. We're working with actually some top colonels who've been active overseas. So that one is heavy in production right now. We're hoping to have that one out next year, as well as we're working on a different format, but it's going to be a children's message in a bottle. It's going to be written as a children's story, and then at the end of the story, the child will be able to include their own letter. The common feature through all our books is that there's all these beautiful letters that, you know, moms have written or dads have written, or in the soldiers' case, soldiers have written. But in the cover, in the front of the book, with priority seating, are some lines inside the book that the gifting mother or father can write their own letter of love, leadership, and legacy. So that's the common through line, that it's more of a gift than it is a book. It's an opportunity for those giving the book to be able to collect their own letter and, you know, in 600, 800 words, write their message for those people who they're giving it to.
Yeah, that's a really nice thing. Now, I received an invitation to participate. Are you still open to submissions? And if some of our listeners would like to participate, is there a way they can do that?
Absolutely. We have a space on our website, which is messageinabottlebook.com. where you can write your letter and then you can submit it right on the website, or you can email it to us. Our contact information is there as well. And what we do is we take all the letters that we receive, and we put them through our readers group, and our readers group kind of looks at all the different letters, and we kind of come up with a strategy of which ones belong where inside the book based on what it is that the messages say and the experience that the book is that we're looking to have at the end of the day.
Oh, that's really, really nice.
So definitely, if you're interested, if you're a soldier right now, we are totally interested in getting your letter. If you're a grandparent, we've got a grandparents one coming out. We've got the children's one as well. We've got a new moms, new dads. So we're just going to kind of grow sustainably, but it seems that people are really interested in the book. We've had great sales so far with lots of interest, so that's encouraging.
Well, congratulations on that too. It's nothing like having a concept, making it, creating it, and have it actually succeed. That's great.
Well, actually, we did. We started selling our books. We launched 3 days prior to Mother's Day, and we did a little sales thing that weekend before Mother's Day, and we hit. No, this is in Halifax, but we hit the top 5 bestsellers in Halifax within 3 days. So we outsold quite a few books in the Halifax area for Mother's Day.
Wow. That's
so that was really,
really
neat. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I can hear that in your voice, although I suspect that you're really excited about things a lot of the time. So.
True enough.
Yeah. So before we took our break, I was talking about some of the themes that I identified or that stuck with me more than anything. Themes like, I'm just going to list off some, and maybe you would like to pick one and talk with me about what you garnered on that theme from putting the book together. There's a lot of talk about turning loose, about how I got to parent you and then I've got to turn you loose, and that how difficult that is. There's character development, where parents want their children to develop a level of character so that they are a blessing to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And also parents talk about their children's amazing abilities like compassion or the ability to laugh and that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know what, the final one, our children's abilities, that one really resonates with me, because part of the reason why we put these book series together is to give back. And one of the moms who joined us is a mom of a child who went to our local sick kids hospital, which is the IWK in Halifax, and a portion of the proceeds from our book sales are going back to the IWK. So far we're in about $4,000 in donations since we've launched the Mothers and Fathers book. And she writes about her daughter, who at 3 years old had been ripped away from her arms. Her daughter has had leukemia, and
right.
It's horrific what her daughter had to experience, the hardships that she had to experience before the age of 3 that hopefully most people in the world will never have to experience, from chemotherapy and radiation and all those things. But at the end of the day, what Cora was talking about was her amazement at the compassion that her daughter had, insofar as how she's a little girl who will break a chocolate bar in half and give the larger half to her brother. The idea that no matter where they go, it's absolutely amazing. It doesn't have to be Disney World, but it could be an old tattered sofa, but it's just an absolutely amazing sofa. And those are the kind of attributes I think that as parents we hope our children will have. And I think even as adults, if we walked that way through life, wouldn't it be amazing to be able to walk into your community and to see the beautiful things that your community has to host for you? I think there's so many amazing things just within 100 feet of where you're sitting right now that have yet to be discovered. And Reese, which is Cora's daughter, was able to find those things.
I think that's the same story, if I recall, where at one point she reports that the two of them had to stay in a little 10-foot square or 10-foot room, And she finally gave up and cried one day, and the child was two, Reese was two, and
exactly.
crawled over to her and said, "You don't cry, Mom, I okay."
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's exactly yeah. the story. Reese, an amazing young woman, and she's, you know, she's the reason, part of the reason why we want to make sure that part of the proceeds of this gift, the letter gifts that all the moms have made, goes to something that I think that's meaningful and will be important to parents. So that's mm-hmm. that's where we're giving back to, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that, of course, is a theme, and we know this from literature even, is to me the opposites are fear and faith.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily a religious faith, but a faith in things working out, a faith that gives hope. I remember one story where the mother said that she recently went to the funeral of a child, and they had pictures around who had died very young, a young person, it wasn't a child per se, but very young. She noted that the parents had made sure to have the kid wear a helmet when he was riding his bicycle and so forth and so on. And she was really facing that as much as parents want to keep their child safe, they have to turn loose and they don't always make it.
Absolutely. I mean, as a parent, you know, and there's a whole movement. My background's in recreation management, and there's a whole movement afoot of, you know, how are we kind of putting our kids in a bubble and making sure that they're not sort of experiencing life. And it's funny because the stories that are inside the book talk about the moments that people are truly experiencing life, which is not when you're wearing your helmet and maybe not when you're always necessarily using your most conscious and logical mind. But those are the times when you're truly living life. You know, it's when, like in my keynote business, we talk about living life large, but grasping hold of every single moment of every single day. And the idea of celebrating life is what living is for. Not that we want to be you know, illogical and not that we want to be unsafe, but the idea that understanding that life is for living and life is for moving forward and life is for trying new things. For example, my family and I, we were in Australia a couple of years ago, and we were in a place called Kangaroo Island, and we're driving down the road. Have you been to Kangaroo Island?
My son went. I was giving a workshop, but he went at 13 on his own in a tour.
Oh, go on. Absolutely fantastic island. And we're driving down this road, and there's this sign that says Little Sahara. And my littlest goes, "Daddy, that's cool. What's that?" So, of course, we turn down the road to go see what it is, right? And it turned out that it's this UNESCO World Heritage Site that are these huge sand dunes. And they've got a little kiosk where you can rent like snowboards for like sandboarding down these massive sand hills. And we went in there, and first thing, of course, as a good parent does, is, you know, you want your children to experience. So before I even try to see this is safe, I put my youngest on the snowboard, and I shove her down the hill, and then off she goes, right? But I mean, that's the essence of life. That's a moment she'll never forget.
Right.
You know, being able to do that, or we went swimming with 60-pound tuna fish, and feed them out of your hands, and those are the things that create those lasting memories. You know, whether it be doing it when you're in Australia or taking the day and doing what we used to call special day and going out for tea and having, you know, just a great conversation with your child or teaching them like you did about, you know, gardening and chickens and you know, life and death and where our food comes from. And those are the things that make the long-term impact on society.
Right. Yeah, well, you're reminding me that what I was drawn to write about were all the living life experiences that I had by living on my grandparents' farm during my childhood. My father was in the military, and so I traveled and moved and traveled more. But my grandparents were always on the farm, and there are things that we have pretty much lost track of now. Like, kids always hung out with the adults, and they were part of whatever the adults were doing, even if it meant that they were stepping and fetching it. You know, they were still they were still part of it, and
right.
we had time to be alone. I lament now that most children have an adult hanging over their shoulder almost every moment of their lives because of people's concern about keeping them safe. And
right.
I myself was able to go out and lie for hours in the pasture and look into the clouds and go down the road and pick blackberries with my sister and that sort of thing, which I think is a real loss that we don't have that now.
I think you're right, and we made a commitment as a family. We, you know, we now have a, operate a little farm. We raise 170, as my daughter calls them, the meat birds. We have another 30 laying hens, and we have gardens and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's really special if you can engage your children in understanding some of those sustainable things, some of those things that are part of, you know, how and who we are, what we are.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading. I was reading a quote the other day. We lost Maya Angelou.
Yesterday.
And the quote that sticks with me is she said this: "I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel." You know, and that is what this book's about. This book is about, and parenting is about, how you make your children feel, right? How do they feel about you at the end of the day? As my wife Lori said, you know, what matters is when you look in the rearview mirror, you know, what do you see? You know, how did you live this life? You only get to come by this way once. You know, and you don't remember, you remember snapshots. It's like a slideshow rather than a full length movie that you remember. So how are you leaving that legacy? How are you leaving that feeling behind? Because that's the stuff that matters, and that's the stuff where legacies are made. You know, whether it be Maya Angelou, or whether it be, you know, great Canadian Chris Hadfield for going up into space and playing rock music, you know, from the space station, right? It's how you make people feel excited about space, excited about new frontiers, you know, a sense of security and warmth through the words of poetry and those types of things that Maya Angelou created, or just the opportunity to feel safe and secure and loved at the end of the day for your children.
You know, my children are now 45, 36, and 26, and one of the things that just brings me great joy is how often we're in contact with one another. You know, this is what I did. Here's something I'm proud of. I'm having a problem. And my son, a couple of weeks ago, took his family to Hawaii for a vacation. He was very excited about it. And for the first couple of weeks, it was horrible. And he was calling me or texting me almost every day. I mean, they were attacked by giant mosquitoes. They rented a house that was on a private beach, and it turned out there was a caretaker that didn't have very good limits, and he kept popping in on them all the time, so they didn't have any privacy. And then there were cockroaches in this expensive place they were staying, and my son called me up and said, "Mom, they fly." So, you know, it was really wonderful that he would call and say, "I need your help. How do I keep a perspective on all this?" And finally, he decided to go to another island and actually go to a hotel, which he decided would not have cockroaches. And I haven't heard from him since. Except for one time. And I said, "I told my husband that you obviously are now having a good time on your vacation, because I'm not hearing from you."
Because you're not hearing from him. Well, and isn't that a wonderful gift? I mean, to know that you're still that caregiver, whether, you know, your child is 46 or 40 years old, or 4 years old. I mean, I think that connection lasts throughout time. You know, I lost my father. He passed away actually a couple months just before my baby was born, before Breton was born. So it was about 7 years ago. And I still think about the times that we're together. I still think about, well, what would Dad do, right? And that's the testament of good parenting. And you know, when you look in that rearview mirror, right, are you still going to connect with your parent. You know, we still have, my dad and I, we still have pizza together on his birthday. I go up to where he's buried. He's got a beautiful plot overlooking the Atlantic Ocean. And as a family, we go up with a large pizza, and we always leave him a slice on our way out. You know, all the other gravestones have flowers. My father has a slice of pizza. But anyway, you know, it's just a wonderful testament that you still want to go there and still want to understand who and what that person can give you forever.
Yeah, here's one thing, though, Tyler. As conscious as I attempted to be as I was raising my children, and many, many, many of these mothers are attempting to be conscious also, there were things that I missed, things that were important to my children, events that I lived through that made things difficult for them. And one of the conclusions that I have come to from being both a marriage and family therapist and having my own experiences is that the design of things is that we are not perfect as parents, because if we were perfect, our children would have no challenges to grow from.
Mm-hmm. I think that we again, back to that, you know, that bubble theory, that we're putting the helmets on our kids and all those things to be able to give them that safe and perfect experience. You know, I talk about my wife's nan is from Newfoundland, and she has a saying that if your little ass was made of glass, it'd been broke for long ago. She's 85 year old. She drinks a shot of kerosene before the winter to ward off the cold. Like she's quite a lady. Anyway, and I didn't know what that meant, so I looked into Cape Breton to English Dictionary, and what it says is if you fall down, you're not made of glass. You're not going to break. Don't worry about it. Just brush yourself off and get back to business. And a parent is no different than a child. You know, that's what we want our kids to do. We want them to fall off the bike, get back up, and try riding again. And it's amazing, because my kids, even, you know, and I have an 11-year-old and a 7-year-old, they tell me things that are meaningful that I've done or my wife has done for them that I don't even remember, right?
Right.
This impactful experience. And it's
right.
Like, my goodness, I don't even remember that. So as a parent, you're going to be going through a turmoil that, first of all, your child's not even going to know about, because they're not going to pick up that is super impactful into their life. But some little thing that's going to happen, they're going to say, yeah, that's super important. And they're going to come back and say, yeah, you did that, and that was really key to me becoming who I am today.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a wonderful gift to be able to give, and you never know when you're going to give it. That's the real challenge, right?
And there's some very interesting things. My adult son now is absolutely convinced that I love Mercedes. Well, I like Mercedes. He owns one now, or he leases one. And he turns to me and he says, Mom, I know you love Mercedes. Well, I like them okay, but here's what actually happened. When he was growing up, we lived in Marin County, and George Lucas, the filmmaker, he lived in San Anselmo, which is the next town over from us, and he drove a 190 Mercedes, a little black car that I just loved. And every time we would pass him on the street, I would go, that's my car. I love that car. And that's where it came from.
Absolutely. Very cool. Yeah, and how would you know that was going to be so? And maybe that's why he has a Mercedes to this day.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
So, well, we're up to our second break. So when we come back, I want to talk about some of the collective beliefs that I pinpointed as I was reading the book and how those work in our lives. So I'm talking with Tyler Hayden, who is the creator of the Message in a Bottle series of books, and we're talking about a mother's message in a bottle. We'll be right back. You're listening to Full Power Living.
Eileen Dillon is a certified senior life mentor with Accessing Universal Intelligence. She's available to conduct mentoring sessions with you to help you understand, change, and evolve using the advice of your own higher self. You can be anywhere in the world. Sessions are conducted through Skype. For more information about these life mentoring sessions, fees, and how to register, go to www.emotionalpro.com and click on the mentoring link at the top. Get personally tailored assistance with your toughest life questions. Visit mentoring@emotionalpro.com today.
Are we back?
We're back.
Oh, good, good.
It's Tyler Hayden and his new radio show with Eileen.
Good, the Emotional Pro. What questions do you have for me, Tyler?
I want to know about what it was like growing up on that farm, girl. It sounded like absolutely awesome.
It was really something. You know what happened for me, Tyler, is that I lost my birth mother when I was under the age of 3. My father came back from World War II and found out that she wasn't taking good care of us. And my sister and me, he got custody of 2 little girls as a single father in 1945.
45, wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, my sister and I spent weekdays in a boarding school and weekends with my father for a period of time. And then he remarried and time been attached to my older sister. And when she went off to school, I was devastated. She was like my mother at that point. Mm-hmm. And so I taught myself to read. And when I went to school, they tried to put me 1 grade behind her when she was actually 2 years older than me. So the solution my parents had was to send me to live with my grandparents on the farm for a year, just me.
Wow.
And it was the most magical. When I went back years later, I realized that that's where I found my soul through all of that. Mm. Because I had time to myself. I connected with nature. I got to spend time with animals. I had time alone. I had people who loved me. I got to be an only child for the only time in my life, you know?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So that's why it was so powerful to me, because plus farms are interesting, as you know. There's always
absolutely
something going on.
Always something to do, that's for sure, whether it's at 6
right
o'clock when I'm raising my chickens or, you know, and you get that quietude, right? When you have that
uh-huh
quietude, you can really experience the reverence that's around you, and I think that was the power I took out of your letter, was just the reverence of the natural world that's around you. And
right,
by being able to spend time in that quietude, you got to understand who you were as a person, and you were actually able to transfer that forward to your children, who are now doing that to your grandchildren, which I think is a powerful legacy.
They are, in fact, and I just want to mention that my daughter, who lives on the East Coast, actually raises chickens, turkeys, rabbits, and has a big garden.
That's awesome.
And my adopted daughter is in the jungles of the Amazon working on with indigenous people on maternal health.
Oh, very cool.
So they're all in nature. So
they're
beliefs that that seem to stand out. Now, I'm interested in beliefs because as a person and as a therapist, I have come to the understanding that we live our beliefs. Whatever we believe in, that's what we see happening in our lives. And so I teased out some of these beliefs. I just want to, again, I'll read them, the ones that I found, and I ask you to pick one and let's talk about it, okay?
Sure.
Okay. One is that life can be difficult. Another is life brings you problems and tests. A third is connecting with God is vital. A fourth, shall I go with all of them? I don't know. I have 5 more. You can't really live fully without forgiveness. Life works best when you're kind and compassionate. The people you hang out with are really important. You need to carefully pick the person you spend your life with as a partner, and parents want the best for their children.
I'd love to chat about caring. I think caring is something that if there's any global ill that we have, I think it's caring, and it's nurturing and fostering that. And that is the message to me that resonates through this book. It's just a book about caring and compassion. That's the through line that when I read it, because it's amazing that everybody who reads the book has a different sort of feeling within the book. So that's mm-hmm always very interesting. And everybody's taking away a different message that they needed to learn. But that idea of caring is so important. You know, how is it that as a parent, how do we care and connect to our children? And how do our children care and connect with us for the long term? You know, those I think are the for me is the powerful message that that comes through this book.
Well, one of the messages that I saw several times, I work with the concept that our Earth is a giant school and we've all come here in order to learn and grow.
Mm-hmm.
And what I saw many times in these stories is either a recounting or a statement of appreciation for what children taught mothers.
Yes. Yeah, it's amazing because, you know, as we move forward with this idea of mutual respect and caring, the moms who we have in this book, I think, approach that relationship building from a point of, you know, what can I give you? And at the same time, I'm being conscious of what you're doing so that I can learn from you. It's a two-way street, right?
Uh-huh.
And I think that that's where the richness of the relationships come from, is by being open to receiving their message. I do a lot of work in mentor design, sort of strategic mentor designing with organizations. And what we set up mentor-mentee relationships between executives and would-be executives that they're nurturing. And it's amazing because at the end of the experience, the exit interviews, what we find is that the mentee gains as much as the mentor does. Whether it be in hard skill development or, you know, looking at the business from an upside down position, it's amazing what comes out of these relationships if you're open to receiving the information.
Mm-hmm. Well, I lived as a single parent for 20 years, and I developed a system of parenting that I now am referring to as parenting consciously. And since the Earth is a giant school and we're all here to learn, one of the things that I point out to parents is that your children are here as much as teachers as they are learners, and that, in fact, you can actually specifically learn things with your child's help. For example, I used to go on and on and on when I started to lecture my children, and I could see my daughter's eyes roll up in her head. She was about 10.
Yep.
And yet, I knew I was doing it, but I couldn't stop.
Right.
So I asked her to help me, and she came up with a little phrase, "I got it, Mom," that she would say as soon as she felt she had my message, so I didn't have to keep repeating it, right?
Right on.
And that's what she did. She, you know, the next time I started, she said, "I got it, Mom," and it took me a sentence or two to stop, but I did. And then I found that it was very easy to stop it, because even though both of us knew that I was doing it, somehow the act of having this 10-year-old help me with the issue was embarrassing to me. And it
right.
really made me want to stop. And so I didn't do it much anymore.
Absolutely. I mean, we are a reflection of our family, right? At the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
and giving your child a voice, what you did is you allowed your child to be able to begin to take control out of how they feel and the relationships that they're in. That, you know, that's a skill that you paid forward for years to come, not at 10, but at, you know, 25 and 30. You know, she's experiencing the benefits of that simple action, because isn't it at the end of the day, the things that we do as parents, it's the simple actions that truly have the biggest results?
Well, you know, coming from the really challenging childhood that I had, I really wanted to change things, and I had the good fortune of being a single parent, so I could do it whatever way I decided to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. You're rolling the dice. And you
right.
You seem to do well with the rolling.
I did all right with it, and my oldest grandchild is about to graduate from high school, and my daughter's child, and their stair steps next year, another one graduates. But these kids are incredible, and my experience as a mother is like, first I saw my family spiraling down, and now it's spiraling up, and it's such a joy. And I read that from all the mothers. They wanted that.
They want their children. They want the best for their children, and they know
right.
that the things that they can give today pay long-term dividends. You know, they know that the time that they give, the love that they give, the soft ear, all those things that we give as a mom, you know, really will pay dividends and as their children grow older and they start to raise children, they're going to start to see those things just multiply, right? That's the idea, is that we want to compound this goodness that we're paying forward in the children that follow all of our children.
You know, my son and daughter-in-law allowed me to have a spiritually oriented conversation with their oldest daughter a year or so ago. And as I was leaving their cabin where I had been visiting, my son was standing next to my car, and he thanked me for doing that. And he said, you know, it's really hard to be, it's almost impossible to both do that day-to-day parenting and keep this part of the puzzle, the spiritual part, also present. And then as he said that, he stopped and he looked at me and he said, okay, how did you do it?
You know, and it's to me, it's how you live your everyday. You know, it's the, it's the choices that you make. It's the wonderful way that you you know, use your words and pay attention and be authentic and be in the moment and be present and like Einstein's mother, when milk would splash on the floor, they'd measure it and they would see how deep it is and how big a splash it was. I mean, she was creating the future scientist.
Right.
And it's those things that we do as a mom that truly help to propel and help our kids skyrocket towards the future. And that's what moms want. That's what, you know, the moms in this book really just want. At the end of the day, I think the measure is that our children are better than we are today. Like, you know, that's what we want for our children. When our children move forward, we go, okay, yeah, they're in a better place. And that doesn't mean money. That just means that they're better, that they're creating a better experience.
You know, a lot of listeners have heard this story from me, but when my daughter was 10, she came to me one day and said she wanted to tell me something, that she didn't want me to get mad about it. And she said, sometimes I think I'm better than you. And I turned to her and I said, you better be better than me. Otherwise, all this work that I've gone through isn't going to be worth it. And years later, when she had her own children, I stayed for a time with her, and I ended up writing her a letter telling her that indeed she is better than me, not in the way that one person is better than another, but in the way that one generation gets better than the one preceding it. And I thanked her for doing that.
And that's that seven generations wisdom. I mean, I think I'm a town counselor in the town of Lunenburg. It's another one of my many job hats that I wear. And, you know, I'm constantly challenging our council on the idea that, you know, are the decisions that we're making today, how are they going to impact our community, which is our families that live here? How is that going to affect it seven generations from now? I mean, the seven-generation philosophy from the Native peoples is, I mean, it's absolutely brilliant. You know, before you go and put in a new road, think about, you know, think about it logically and with some sense of not tomorrow, but seven tomorrows, right? That really is powerful thinking, and I think our kids are thinking a lot more like that. Our kids are making choices about the places that they work and the people that they spend time with based on that seven-generation philosophy.
Right. Well, as you know, I have many more questions to ask you, but we need to stop.
What?
So
well,
we'll
continue on the phone line after.
Okay.
I'll answer all those questions.
I want to thank you for being on Full Power Living, and I know that many, many people, as occurred for me, are going to be moved and uplifted by reading the stories in Mother's Message in a Bottle and now Father's Message in a Bottle. And that makes it a gift from you to your readers and then for your readers to others that I know they're going to want to share with.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and come and join us on Facebook and at messageinabottlebook.com. And the books are available everywhere fine books are sold. So go grab yourself a copy and make sure you buy a couple so you can give them away.
Absolutely. I'm out of copies already.
Perfect.
Okay. So that's messageinabottlebook.com. All right. Thank you, Tyler. Join me again next week for my conversation about your human blueprint, your divine human blueprint, with Julie Renee Doering. We're so fortunate these days with all the wonderful, helpful information that's available to us to enhance our lives and keep us healthier. So listen for the amazing things that Julie Renee has to share with you next week on Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. Thank you, Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media, for your reliable service as our Full Power Living producer. Thank you all for listening. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
To Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.